This is the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Welcome everyone to the Liverpool.com podcast. The new season is underway, but the transfer window is still very much ongoing. And today we're going to talk a little bit about some centre-backs Liverpool could target. I'm your host, David Comerford, and I'm joined by Liverpool.com writer James Martin. And like I said, James, you know, a lot of the focus right now is on defensive midfield, but Liverpool have got a pretty significant need in central defence too. So that's what we're going to take a look at today. And the prism we're going to use is basically the criteria set out by Liverpool in this sort of transfer search. So there was a report from The Athletic recently outlining kind of a three-point plan for Liverpool when it comes to centre-backs. So number one is that the player should be 23 or under, which, you know, you can certainly understand why. Not required to come straight into the side is point two, and point three is that they will be left-sided. So what myself and James have done is we've basically applied those criteria. We've each come up with a couple of centre-backs that fit the bill for Liverpool. We're going to explain why we think they might be good signings and just kind of assess this area of the team more generally too. So before we get into the actual players themselves, James, I think we should discuss what we kind of want from a centre-back. So for you, what are the key points that Liverpool should be looking at in terms of attributes for this position?
Well, I think the left-sided point is key for a couple of reasons. I think on the one hand, you've got this new system that Liverpool have been experimenting with. It does kind of look like it's probably here to stay now. It's maybe a bit early to say that, but obviously we've persisted with it throughout pre-season. I think what was really telling was that first game when we were so short of number sixes that Klopp played Trent there, but he still used the hybrid system, used Conor Bradley as that kind of inverted fullback. So I think that's probably here to stay, at least for the medium term. And so what that left-sided centre-back gives you is that option to maybe swap Robertson out in certain fixtures, or at least put some competition on that space, if you like, to try and get the best out of Robertson, in the sense that, you know, we saw it against Chelsea, his side was targeted quite a lot. He's still excellent going forward. And, you know, considering he is a converted attacking fullback, I think he's doing a sterling job as this kind of hybrid centre-back. But obviously, it's not going to be his natural wheelhouse, if you like. So I suppose that's one of the things that the left-sided centre-back would bring. But I think also, even sort of disregarding the new system, that would have been pretty high up on my agenda when you look at Virgil van Dijk and you're thinking he's 32 now. Obviously, the hope is he can have another good 2-3 seasons at the top level, maybe even more when you look at someone like Thiago Silva. But you can't bank on every centre-back being having that sort of level of longevity. You do have to start planning for the future, even if it is a very sort of gradual phased takeover. And when we do replace Van Dijk, obviously we're looking for someone who can play that left-sided role. On the right, there's Konate, and there's, you know, optimism that he could be the long-term answer at the back for Liverpool, but he doesn't really have that partner yet. You could say Gomez, but he's not a natural on the left. And, you know, there's question marks over his levels anyway. Obviously, Matip is 31, 32 now as well, so he's not one for the long term. So, yeah, I think the system has maybe accelerated the need for that left-sided centre-back, but it would have been high up on my agenda regardless.
Absolutely. And I think that is a point that I didn't mention in the intro that's quite important in all this. You know, Liverpool not only getting a player who can help them this season, but also somebody who can long-term succeed Virgil van Dijk. And what would be interesting is to see whether the defence is built around Konate. Is he going to be someone who kind of has to step up and be that leader going forward? Or is it going to be this new signing? I think personally, I'd probably lean towards constructing it around Konate just because I think he's shown that he can be kind of one of the best in his position in the world, and he should be the one who's kind of entrusted, given the keys almost when Virgil van Dijk drops out of the starting lineup or moves on from Liverpool or whatever happens with him. And like I said, just before we get into our first couple of players, you mentioned there, James, that, you know, it's crucial to get a new centre-back for the new system. If I said to you to rate between 1 and 10 the importance of Liverpool bringing in a new central defender in the next couple of weeks, 1 being that they don't need one and 10 being it's absolutely critical, where would you kind of put that transfer need?
Well, it's hard because obviously for scale, you'd assume that a number 6 is 10 on the scale, given that, you know, that's that's pretty urgent at this point. And it's not as urgent as that, but it's not a million miles away. I think I'd probably put it at about a 7. Because you look at the options on paper for Liverpool, and you could get through a season with that set of centre-backs pretty comfortably, provided they stayed fit. But that's just such a if at the moment, because you look at Konate, he's injury-prone. You look at Joe Gomez, he's injury-prone. Joel Matip, definitely injury-prone. So you're only really left with Van Dijk as this kind of solid, should-be-available-all-season kind of option. And obviously, some act of God or act of Pickford can come in and sort of ruin that, can't they? So even with the safe centre-back, if you like, anything can happen. So, yeah, it's more of a numbers thing than a quality thing. I'm happy enough with the levels of most of the Liverpool centre-backs. I think Matip has been the subject of criticism that's maybe a little bit on the harsh side. I think he does struggle in the new system, to be fair. He doesn't have the pace. He's never had the pace, and he certainly doesn't anymore have the required pace that Konate has to kind of cover that kind of two positions in one. So I understand where that criticism has come from. But, you know, we are talking about squad players at this point, if we accept that Van Dijk and Konate are the starters. So, you know, if they're the undisputed first choice and one of them picks up a knock and Matip has to come in, maybe the system gets tweaked a bit. I don't think it's the end of the world, really. But my concern is when more than one injury starts to sort of build up, and that's when there really needs to be someone else. So, yeah, I think mostly just a depth issue rather than a starting issue. But then, as I alluded to with Robertson, that would give the option of changing the starting lineup as well, which sort of maybe pushes it up from maybe a 5 or a 6 to that kind of 7 I've given it. So, yeah, the next priority after a number 6, I would say.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think, you know, there's been some players who've been winners with the new system, and Matip is probably a loser, especially if he's kind of asked to play that Konate role. Gomez, I think, is more of an intriguing one because given his defensive frailties that he showed last season, maybe he's someone who'd actually suit playing alongside two centre-backs, you know, because he kind of slots into one of those roles quite nicely. I suppose his level of importance is going to depend on whether Liverpool can get someone. And on that note, let's talk about a couple of potential options. So, James, if you just kind of give us your first option, run us through why you think they'd be a good fit for Liverpool.
Yeah, OK. I think I'll start with Nico Schlotterbeck, one who's not been really mentioned. So start with a bit of a curveball. And I think the biggest surprise for me is that he hasn't been mentioned. When you talk about the criteria that we know Liverpool are looking at, he does seem to tick more or less all of them. I mean, he's 23 years old. He's more proven at a high level than most players Liverpool will be able to get. And we know how much the club likes that. Obviously, that comes with a higher price tag. But, you know, you could say maybe Liverpool showed its hand a little bit with the Caicedo bid. It shows that if they think the player is right and if they think it'll have a big effect on the squad, then the money is there. So I don't know how much Dortmund would ask for Schlotterbeck, but they signed him not so long ago for, you know, a pretty small fee. Just that was an intra-Bundesliga transfer. I think it was Freiburg he came from, and it was a small amount of money. I think there was maybe a contractual sort of rundown going on. So, you know, there were mitigating circumstances, but I think it was somewhere in the region of sort of 20 million, which is, you know, a bit of a steal considering the role he played in the title charge for Dortmund last season. He was really impressive. I went over there last season to catch a game, and I mean, all eyes were on Bellingham, of course. That was back when we were still hoping he would come to Liverpool, and sure enough, he was incredible. Made me much more upset when we didn't get hold of him. But Schlotterbeck was another one of the standouts. He was really sort of, from a defensive standpoint, very solid. But from an attacking standpoint, we talked about Matip at the top of the show. And yeah, he has those same qualities. He could really replace that kind of bizarre sort of centre-back come playmaker role that Matip has sort of slotted into. I think he got 5 assists in the league for Dortmund last season, 4 goals as well. And the goals reflect a real aerial threat. He's, I think, 1.9 metres tall. So he's a big lad. I suppose the one sort of red flag for Liverpool, or maybe orange flag, given that I'm still advocating signing him, is that despite the height, he's maybe not the absolute strongest in the air. And we know Liverpool loves a kind of dominant aerial centre-back. He's good, but he's not sort of Van Dijk good in that regard. But again, one of the criteria that we mentioned for Liverpool is that they're looking for someone who's not necessarily going to demand they start straight away. So if they sign the finished product and then ask them to wait until Van Dijk declines, that's not going to happen. So you know, someone like Schlotterbeck, I think he is in kind of in that sweet spot, especially if there was the option of offering him games immediately in the kind of Robertson role. Because, yeah, my only real concern is that we couldn't get him because of being unable to promise those kind of minutes, because he is on the cusp of being almost too good for that role. But yeah, I really like what I see with him, and he does seem to tick a lot of boxes. What I didn't mention there is that he's a lefty as well. So that's, you know, right, the key criterion ticked off.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, huge, obviously, upside to getting a left-footed centre-back. I think doubly for Liverpool, because, you know, if they end up playing in a four when Liverpool has the ball, when Liverpool doesn't have the ball in more of a left-back role, then obviously that's going to be more important, and, you know, just will help Liverpool a lot with kind of building up from the back, having that left-footer there. I think the point you make about the Caicedo bit is interesting in terms of, obviously, we don't know how much Liverpool are going to spend on the number six that they do get. But there should still be a decent amount of money left over. And also, I mean, the point about aerial dominance is probably a crucial one too. I think, off the top of my head, I think Van Dijk and Konate were two of the top four players in the Premier League last season for aerial duel success percentage. And that tells you, obviously, how much Liverpool value it. I suppose also you could make the case that when you're playing a back three, when Liverpool kind of have the ball, is it less important? You know, can you kind of cope with having a player who's not so much of a specialist? I mean, that there might be an argument in that. We've seen a few teams who maybe play kind of a three and have a smaller centre-back in there who's just really good on the ball, and they can kind of cope with that. So that's an interesting way of looking at it as well. My first suggestion is Arthur Tayat from Rennes. He's also 23 years old. Joined from Bologna last summer for 19 million. A lot of the players on the market, interestingly, seem to be ones who've quite recently moved, which obviously inflates the price tag, long contracts and things like that. Just a quick rundown on him. Again, you know, similar to James, not someone who's necessarily been linked, but someone who probably should have been. There was a graph posted on Twitter by an account called Soccer God. He wins a higher volume of duels than players like Botman from Newcastle, Van de Ven, who was obviously linked with Liverpool, went to Tottenham, Gabriel from Arsenal. Good on the ball as well. Second in the French league last season for total passes. And also provides that ball carrying like Schlotterbeck, like Matip. Third in Europe's top five leagues last season for progressive carries from central defence, which is very useful for, I mean, you can see it firsthand with Matip how useful it is in terms of it gives the opposition something else to think about, and he can kind of break through those lines of pressure. And also, I think another part of his package is athleticism too. And if you want kind of players he's similar to, Stats Bomb said he was very similar to Lewis Dunk, which I don't think is a most spectacular name, but we know kind of the demands that Brighton put on their centre backs, which again, the style of football they play, I think, is highly applicable to sort of an elite team at the moment. And then there was a squawker kind of a graphic as well, showing that he's quite similar to Vardiol, who incidentally I think would have been the absolute dream option for Liverpool in this position. Not only as kind of an immediate candidate to start, but also perfect long term successor to Van Dijk, obviously. He's off the table now, to say the least. And the last thing on Tayat that I found was that he has 8 caps for Belgium, which at the age of 23, and given that Belgium is a strong team, certainly bodes well. And the one thing I wanted to ask about with him, James, before we kind of move on to our second players, is that he can also play left back. I mean, how important do you think it is to bring in someone who's got experience of playing on the left of a four? We know in this Liverpool system that when Liverpool don't have the ball, Trent retreats to right back, or at least he's supposed to, and sort of the left-sided centre-back in possession kind of becomes a left-back in that more conventional four. I mean, I think in an ideal world, you would have someone who's capable of doing both, but I also think back to sort of Manchester City last season. It seemed like Guardiola was able to sort of coach his centre-backs to be able to defend as a right-back or a left-back quite well, even if they weren't necessarily specialists in that role. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think a lot can be achieved with coaching. You're right to highlight that. Although, to be fair, Nathan Ake was used a lot, wasn't he? And he has played at fullback before. I remember he spent the season alone at Watford and basically spent the whole time at left back. So I suppose there was maybe a little bit of a grounding there. But yeah, definitely there's a role for coaching, especially when, you know, given the system is designed to sort of have the more offensive threats further up the pitch. You're not necessarily looking for a classic left back who's going to be bombing up and down like we've seen Robertson do so well. So it's primarily about the kind of security on the defensive side of the game. And obviously centre-backs will have that skill set sort of drummed into them from a long time. So yeah, it's like you say, I think it's probably a plus point, but not a kind of definite need.
Yeah, I think it's like you say, I think it is something that can be moulded. But when we looked at someone like Van de Ven, and we'll obviously see how he does at Tottenham this season and his kind of Premier League standard, but that was something he could do, and that was why I think Liverpool maybe will rue that one. But again, we'll see how he fares under Postecoglou. So James, let's have your second player now, please.
Yeah, onto more familiar ground with this one. I thought someone had to pick out Inacio, Gonzalo Inacio, given that he does really tick the boxes. There's a reason that Liverpool sort of persistently have their name mentioned in connection with his name. It's, you know, I don't know whether there's too much substance in the links or whether it's just two and two together. But yeah, it is one that does make a lot of sense on paper, especially with the kind of rumoured release clause, which is in, you know, reasonable territory given the way the market's going. It's not cheap by any means, but you know, sort of I think kind of 40 million euro sort of territory, so it's certainly affordable for a club like Liverpool. It's it's a lot to pay for someone who's come straight out of the Portuguese league, you know. We saw Liverpool pay, you know, double that for Darwin Nunez from the same league last season, so clearly that's not a massively kind of off-putting thing to the club. I think there is respect for that league within the recruitment department. They think it's a good stepping stone league and maybe one where there is some value still to be found. Maybe that's changing with the fees some of the clubs are asking for now for their top talent. But yeah, it's a strong league. It's only just outside of the sort of traditional top five. I think there was a little time a while back where France and Portugal were sort of swapping places in that kind of spot for the fifth league in terms of UEFA coefficient, stuff like that. So they've seen enough in terms of a sample size. Obviously, being at one of the top Portuguese clubs also means you'll be a regular in either the Champions League or the Europa League. So that gives another good place for Liverpool to do some scouting. And yeah, Inacio, he looks good. He's left-sided as well. Last season, he did have a slightly better aerial duel win rate than Schlotterbeck. I mean, what you would say is that was Inacio's best season so far, and I think it was one of Schlotterbeck's worst seasons. He has had massive numbers for aerial duel wins in a couple of his campaigns in the past. But yeah, it shows a player sort of trending in the right direction. Obviously, you've got to account for a little bit of randomness in how many duels you win in a given season, but he does seem to be improving as a player. That's why he's coming onto the radar of these clubs now. Another one who's also good with the ball, very progressive, very good, you know, passing-wise, he's secure. He's got a good pass completion percentage. So yeah, it's all things you'd want from a ball-playing centre-back in a possession-heavy side like Liverpool. I think that's basically all there is to it, to be honest. You look at the defensive metrics as well, like tackles, things like that, just the building blocks, and there's nothing too concerning in those numbers. So yeah, much as I can't say I've watched him particularly regularly, he shows up well in the numbers. And you know, we know that it's not just fans looking at these numbers, it's Liverpool as well. And so yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something in the interest that's been sort of bubbling away in the rumour column all summer.
Yeah, and I think if Inacio was the one that Liverpool ended up with, I'd be more than happy with that, to be honest, especially at this late stage of the window. I think he's been a name that has been, like you mentioned, James, he's been mentioned in connection with Liverpool for quite a few months now. And I think I always talk about how the Portuguese league is such a impressive talent factory. I mean, especially those kind of top three teams. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, Liverpool have obviously not only they've bought a couple of players from that league, they've targeted a few more. Whether that will remain the case now that Julian Ward's gone is, I think, an interesting thing to keep an eye on, because, you know, Julian Ward, I think he worked with the Portuguese national team, used to be the Liverpool loan manager for Spain and Portugal. So we had a huge amount of contacts in that region. You know, we don't know who's going to be the long-term sporting director, but whether there'd still be that same emphasis on talent based in Portugal, I think is an interesting one. But certainly for this summer in ASEO, I think is worth considering. The second name I went for is, again, I think probably following on from my first one, just in terms of the lack of links, a slightly rogue choice, but it's Strahinja Pavlovic from RB Salzburg. He's 22, so slightly younger than Tejas. Again, he moved last summer, joined from Monaco for €7 million. And I've read an article about him from Scouted Football, and just a few of the key points in that. There's a heavy emphasis on how aggressive he is as well, how kind of he's sometimes to his own detriment. He's, I think, similar to Konate in that sense, because we know how much Konate is willing to kind of push out of defence to almost chase the ball. Physically dominant, both in the air and on the ground. You know, we've talked about aerial duels and how important they are already. There's a sense that he needs to work on it, is passing a little bit, but that he's a specialist when it comes to progressive carries. And I think really, he's all about how the game evolves. That could be a huge thing with centre-backs. As you know, we talked about how there's an emphasis on them being able to play out from the back in the past few years, but maybe more so now. It's going to be about, you know, can they not actually just, you know, play the ball? Can they advance it up the pitch themselves? And there's more and more of them that are able to do that at the top level. Sometimes the aggression can kind of apparently lead to him overcommitting a little bit, and you get the sense that he is quite raw, would be a bit of a project player, I suppose, and that kind of does fit the bill for Liverpool that we mentioned at the start, with just, you know, player doesn't need to start straight away. And they also say he's well suited to a back three. Our own writer, Ben Bokshak, actually said he's an admirer. He said Pavlovic is deceptively fast, which is obviously important for Liverpool to play in the high line and quite comfortable on the ball too. And we know how much Liverpool love Red Bull, the Red Bull kind of shop really for players. You know, they really admire, I think, how they scout players, the kind of philosophy of football that they have. And so I think I'd be surprised if he hasn't popped up on their radar. Whether they're entirely sold, I don't know. Whether he's someone who's maybe a more long-term target, we'll see. But I think Pavlovic will be someone who has come under consideration already. There have been comparisons to Nemanja Vidic as well, which is probably inevitable given that he is this, you know, young, upcoming Serbian centre-back. But he does already have 28 caps for his country, which I think is very impressive at the age that he is. So definitely kind of an exciting emerging talent in that position, even if he is a little bit rough around the edges at this point. Again, you start to wonder, like, are Liverpool going to be able to get a perfect player at this point of the market? Probably not. But on sort of Pavlovic and on centre-back generally, James, I mean, how much room is there for kind of, you know, I used the term project player before. How much room is there for a player like that? I mean, we talked at the start about how Liverpool are willing to bring in a player who's not maybe starting 11 calibre straight away, but what kind of timeline do you think they should realistically be looking at given the current, you know, state of their options at centre-back?
I mean, they were looking at Lavia as a potential starting number six, weren't they, by the looks of things? So they do seem to be working on the premise. It's a cliche, isn't it? But the kind of, if you're good enough, you're old enough type thing. I don't think they'll be worried too much about that. So as long as there's someone of the sort of required quality to step in when needed, that's kind of the baseline level. Klopp needs to be able to trust them, so they need to be kind of a starting level for Liverpool, but that's a different bar, if you like, to being able to displace Van Dijk and Konate. So I think, yeah, you're looking at that kind of sweet spot of someone who's maybe going to come in as probably the third best centre back at the club in terms of how Liverpool are looking at things. But even if they were, you know, a little way behind Matip or even Gomez in that starting pecking order, it wouldn't be the end of the world as long as there was that clear kind of, this player has a huge ceiling, we think they can progress within the next maybe 2 to 3 years. I think that's a kind of reasonable timeline to put on it. Obviously, there's faith in Van Dijk and there's faith in him being able to maintain his levels for a while to come. So you don't want to get someone in saying, you know, you're going to be starting in that Van Dijk spot in 12 months' time, because you know, we have every faith that he could refine those peak levels where he was, you know, perhaps the best centre-back in the world. He had maybe a harder time of things last season, but that's not to say you can't bounce back. So, yeah, I don't think you can really say with any confidence that it'll be that sort of replacement will be happening within a season's time. I don't think you can tell that to new recruits. So I think you do have to be taking a slightly longer term view of things. But at the same time, as we mentioned with the injury prone nature of the back line, you can make this pitch to the players and say, look, you're not going to be a guaranteed starter, but there's going to be opportunities. We can engineer some of them in the Europa League, in cup competitions, and you may well end up finding yourself thrust into the spotlight, because much as we're not banking on any injuries to these starters, we you know have to look at the numbers and say they're very possible. And so yeah, I think it's a tough kind of sweet spot to find, because every player is going to want to be starting games, and you know any player who doesn't kind of back themselves to start maybe isn't quite of the level or even the mindset that Liverpool are looking for. So it is a sort of a tricky balancing act, but I think maybe that's where the under 23 criterion helps out, in the sense that, you know, you'd hope these players at that kind of age can take a bit of a long-term perspective and you know, they'll come in with respect for the likes of Van Dijk and know they can't just walk into the team. So yeah, I don't think there's going to be a strict timeline on it, because I think it really does depend on how things pan out with Van Dijk, even with Matip potentially, although it does look like he might leave at the end of his contract. But yeah, I think that's the kind of area we're looking at.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting with this, because you've got Van Dijk, obviously, as the one that will be looked at as, you know, he needs a successor. But, you know, if this system does stay much longer, I mean, maybe the player's a Robertson successor in a weird way, just because if they move towards the Man City model of having like their own Nathan Ake, essentially, then that player might actually be, you know, there might actually be sort of three specialist centre-backs there as opposed to just two. But again, you know, Jurgen Klopp's only maybe here for another 3 years. You don't necessarily know how that system will change before then, how it will change after him and things like that. So it's hard to predict the future, but certainly a few possibilities. And I think the point about the Europa League is a good one, because that gives, as much as they obviously don't want to be in that competition, it does give them opportunities for rotation that they probably didn't have last year. I mean, I think we've seen Champions League games in the past where Klopp's kind of put Matip and Gomez in to give them minutes, but they've kind of struggled a bit and Liverpool's defence has looked quite kind of erratic. I think, you know, with all due respect to teams in Europa League, Liverpool are just going to be the strongest team in that competition. They should be able to sort of throw their third and fourth choice centre-backs or whoever into the lineup there and it look kind of a lot more stable, you'd hope. And I do think it gives, like I say, not just obviously in centre-back, but across the team, the opportunity to give some fringe players minutes and keep them happy, which is obviously really important. So last question then, James, before we finish up. There's been a lot of talk, not only with the defensive midfield position, but with centre-back too, about how the state of the market this year is uninspiring, about how it's a bad year to kind of need to address those two areas. I mean, what do you make of that? Do you think, you know, we've obviously looked today at quite long lists of players who might meet Liverpool's criteria, basically the pool of players that they're shopping in. Having looked at that, do you think that maybe the weakness of the market is overstated, or would you agree that it's maybe a little bit on the underwhelming side?
It's hard to say, because I don't think those claims are necessarily saying that there's a total shortage of players out there. I just think it's a case of what the prices are doing, given how important these positions are to a lot of top teams in the same summer. I think that's probably the biggest problem. When you look at, you know, Arsenal were in the market for a defensive midfielder, so they've signed Rice for huge money. But West Ham could demand that because lots of other big clubs were in the running. Chelsea needed one. They obviously went and signed Caicedo and Labia. So, you know, it's that kind of, yeah, almost the demand side of things as much as anything else. So I suppose, considering we've picked out, you know, three names who haven't really been linked, it's hard to say, because we don't know exactly what the kind of demands would be for those players. You know, you can do it on paper and think, I'm sure they'd go for a reasonable price. I mean, Schlotterbeck, I mentioned, you know, the 20 million or so he went for even last summer. But, you know, the way the market's gone, you wouldn't be surprised if that had at least tripled if you did knock on Dortmund's door now, maybe even more. Like, it's just no way of saying until that inquiry happens. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it does show that there are lots of options out there. I think there is the tendency to just kind of limit yourself to who Liverpool have actually been linked to and think those are the only players out there. It's like when the Lavia deal didn't materialise, it was suddenly there was this conversation of there's no one left for Liverpool to sign. Obviously, there are still good number sixes out there. You know, we've maybe seen that with reports, you know, at the time of recording anyway, that we're moving towards Decore. I mean, Chelsea might have signed him by the time that this goes out, who knows. But yeah, I think Inacio was one who we mentioned who does have that release clause. So yeah, there's flexibility there, and that there are ways of getting good deals even in a tricky market.
Definitely, and I think that's a nice optimistic note for us to finish the podcast on. So let us know in the comments if you've got any kind of suggestions for players you think Liverpool should target with the centre-back role, or if there's a name that myself or James have said that you think particularly stands out to you. And yeah, in the meantime, remember to check out all the written content that goes up on Liverpool.com, and we'll be back next week with another podcast. So thanks very much, everyone, for listening.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.